are complete. He turned on his heel and walked at speed back the way he had come. Jensa Deel stood impatiently in the long queue of tattered pilgrims and scruffy supplicants that led to the choral node. The rib-like arches of the solar station Karu Non stretched up around her. It had taken 19 hours without food or rest to get to the front, with nothing to occupy her but the ache in her bones, the gnawing in her belly, and the fear that she would have a relapse of the mind plague, that horrible migraine-inducing psychospasm that had afflicted her ever since the day she had swum too deep under ferro-giant Omicron. She had kept the fear away with detailed thoughts of how she would rescue the last remnants of Saltai of X, then later resettle it in her own fashion, turning it from a drowning world to a thriving, fighting, killing engine of war. Her stomach rumbled every few minutes, that hungry animal inside her waking up and beginning to prowl around her guts. She had found a survival pack in the Arvis lighter after all, and its vitae paste had filled a gap, but it had not lasted nearly long enough.
"Deel, Jensa,"
intoned the gaunt, wrinkled-headed adjudicator at the top of the judicial lectern. She looked up sharply. The ancient had a collar of auto-candle lumens extending from his ruff, and a tattoo of a third eye on his forehead. Its rays of black and white faded to translucency with age.
"That is me," she said. "Present, I mean."
"Rigswoman, Jensa, Malia, Deel, present your proposed missive before the masters of the choir."
She stepped forward, eyebrows raised, and fixed the adjudicator with her most commanding stare. It was a look that had intimidated drunken riggers into compliance, usually promising a swift slap of a wrench on the side of the head. But here, directed up at an impassive judiciary some 18 feet above her, it lacked something in the way of threat.
"I request the regular winter evacuation fleet be sent to Saltai of X, for the cold cycle is growing close," she said. "This is a routine request and procedure."
The wrinkled judiciary screwed up his face, making him look ancient beyond words.
"Have I not seen this exact request from Saltai of X before, young lady? Have I not already given it a negative verdict?"
He looked down at her, as if she was no more than a clot of blood stuck to his shoe.
"You realize the penalty for wasting the time of an Imperial adept?"
"This time you have little choice in the matter," said Deel, grabbing Farron's scroll from her waist and holding it up.
The adjudicator sighed theatrically, extended a multi-jointed limb from a hidden compartment in his lectern, and grabbed the scroll with a three-pronged claw. The artificial appendage transferred it up to his wrinkled, bulge-knuckled hands. He tuttered before checking its seal. Deel felt a warm glow inside as the pompous fool's expression curdled through confusion to disbelief to barely concealed awe.
"Emperor's grace," he whispered. Is this a Primaris seal?"
A susurrus of whispers spread back through the queue behind Deel.
"Yes,"
she said, trying to make her voice as strident as possible. "Read it, fellow servant of the throne. I have no more time to waste." The adjudicator nodded and unfurled the scroll. He drank in the information, his watery eyes seeming to bulge from his skull as he read and reread its contents.
"I see. And you would have our astropathic choir send for evacuation craft to escort the populace of Saltai of X to safety. Is that correct, Rigswoman Deel?"
"It is."
"Unfortunate. I have a listed prohibition against that exact course of action. Somewhere here."
He sorted through the parchments on his desk, pulling one out to peer at it with eyes creased.
"And though it is vague as to its origin, it bears the hallmark of the Adeptus Astartes. The seal is authentic, though unfortunately the author did not deign to state his rank, nor his chapter."
"My scroll is not vague. As you can see, it comes from Primaris Lieutenant Zedro Farron of the Dark Angels, formerly of the Indomitus Crusade, and it must be obeyed."
"I must confess, if the rumours are true that the Primaris Marines are acquainted with Robute Gilliman himself..."
At this, the adjudicator linked his thumbs and crossed his hands in the winged sign of the Aquila.
"This sets a new precedent."
That is good to hear, said Deal, a tiny flame of hope burning in her chest. She returned the sign, trying hard not to smile. Will you honour it?
This time,
said the adjudicator, his goldfish-like expression betraying the fact he saw Deal in a whole new light.
I believe I will. Is there anything else, mademoiselle?
Yes, said Deal. Kindly send a missive to the mercenaries gathered upon the neighbouring world Saltire Non Aqua. 1,000 drums of refined promethium to the first Alphic category warship to enter low orbit and establish a defensive perimeter above ferro-giant Thetoid. All I need is a parley. I will take it from there.
As you wish, mademoiselle,
said the adjudicator, his quill scribbling hard upon his data slate.
Mercenaries, fuel, 1,000 barrels of promethium, defensive perimeter.
Tell them to make haste, said Deal. War will find us before the evacuation vessels bear us to safety, I'm sure of it.
A war that requires an army of mercenaries.
Yes.
We have contacts. A hireling alliance recently gained permission to bring one of their macro-class warships into Karu Nearspace. You will have your audience, Jensa, Malia, Deal.
Good, said Deal, her eyes narrowing. Saltire Vex will not be caught off guard again.
6 Kai Rotar, previously unknown coordinates, subrealm. High Commander Surestrike stared out from the viewing dome, focusing upon the tiny flames that flickered in the nothingness of the subrealm. He had lately found them hypnotic. He could not shake the suspicion they seemed to move all the more when he focused on them. Folly, of course. No living thing could survive out there, let alone detect his thoughts. Not even here, in the otherworldly space that few understood. The fourth sphere expansion had been sent out from the Sept Worlds to great fanfare and rejoicing. Like its last two predecessors, it had one of the students of Puretide with it. This time, though, the Kanjian alumnus had been in stasis instead of at the helm. The second sphere expansion had been led across the Damocles Gulf by the now infamous Commander Farsight, specialist in the Mont-Car school of warfare, and the third led by the avatar of the Kaoyon, Commander Shadow Sun. The fourth carried with it the genius Monat, known as Kais, but he was with them more as a totem than a leader, an exemplar of the greater good embodied in a soul that had sacrificed everything else. Kais was the third of the trinity of young protégés that had studied under the master atop Mount Kanji. It was said he had become so devoted to the Monat way of war that Aun Var decreed he be alone at all times, lest others sully the purity of his vision. He was only to leave his cryostasis cylinder in times of desperate need, though that seemed odd to a race that thrived on communality. The Firecast had, of course, respected that command. Leadership of the Fourth Sphere expansion had instead been entrusted to Surestrike. He had fought alongside Shadow Sun on Mul'Galath Bay, Vol'Taurus, and beyond, and earned the trust of the Firecast in doing so, earning the position of High Commander. Yet, where Farsight had found infamy and Shadow Sun earned undying glory, Surestrike had found his destiny swallowed whole by the vast interstellar anomaly known officially as the Greater Axial Rift. Of late, the Tau had been using another term for it, the Mont Yevar, the Devourer of Hope. Now the Fourth Sphere expansion floated like a fleet expelled from a storm in foreign waters, carried like flotsam upon currents they had no way of understanding, let alone controlling. They were directionless, at the mercy of forces they barely understood. Only the grace of the Tau Var could carry them to their target now. During the first sphere expansion, the Earthcast had experimented with how to briefly oscillate between reality and that strange half-reality the Gwela called the Warp. They had limited success, utilizing only the surface of the deep, mysterious dimension they had first encountered in the Damocles Gulf. Intrigued, but still not fully comprehending that which they were dabbling with, they toyed with the breakthrough technology, never truly understanding it, making short jumps as a stone skims along the surface of a pond.
During the Damocles War, the scientists and meta-theorists had looked with awe and no little envy at the Imperial warships that disappeared from the void in a pulsing, roiling explosion of light, diving wholly into this alternate dimension, travelling great system-spanning distances upon its underwater currents, and then surfacing again in real space without warning. More often than not, they did so specifically to rain hell upon their foes. It was just such a tactic that had seen the Gwaeron Shah launch the invasion of Dal Ith. Dal Ith, a war so violent, so sudden, so epoch-shattering that even its debris had yielded the key to a new future. That future had seen the Fourth Sphere expansion built, modified for subrealm travel, and now lost with all hands, Surestrike at the helm. The High Commander screwed his eyes shut hard as if to banish his failure. The Aon should never have trusted him to break new ground, to lead an expedition of billions of lives, let alone to find new horizons in the quest to expand the Tau Empire for the good of all. He was no student of Puretide. He was a talented leader. He had to be, or else he would never have achieved O rank. But when it came to the genius needed to lead an entire expansion, he could not help but feel that he fell short. The nebula-like subrealm outside the viewing dome roiled and spun. It seemed to Surestrike that it formed faces in the ether, hideous visages that grinned and howled and screamed. It was amazing how the systems of the mind played such tricks, enforcing pattern recognition on the most abstract of sights. Yet the phenomenon seemed strangely frequent, happening more and more with every passing deck. Lights danced in the eyes of the phantom skulls out there, spinning like Violan fireflies, caught in specimen flasks as they played around the Fourth Sphere's becalmed fleet. Surestrike could not shake the feeling the skeletal faces were mocking him.
Chapter 7. Descent of Darkness. Duskenwald. Allhallow. Scorpid Cluster. A murder of crows shot upward from the endless canopy of the Duskenwald. They squawked in alarm as they flapped, ungainly and scared, into Allhallow's evening skies. Something large but completely invisible was descending from the clouds above them, its retrojets roaring low as it gradually came to a halt in the clearing below. Gohoriel narrowed his eyes, detaching his psi-crown and pushing it back into the cockpit's alcove recess as he guided the dagger to halt. The crown's mental amplifier had made an uninterrupted planetfall almost too simple in the end. Part of Gohoriel longed for the signal bells on the cockpit's Auspec recess to chime for an aerial engagement in which to prove his power over the weak-blooded successor chapter that called this world home. The work of eons was more important, of course. With the crown and the relic from Saltai of X boosting his psychic ability, he had excised his presence from the minds of any that sought him. Nonetheless, he still had a nagging, scratching suspicion in the back of his mind, a sense that he was being followed, and not just by the deluded thinbloods that thought themselves true sons of the lion. He rearranged the octocraniad around his neck, ensuring the skulls all faced outwards. It would not do to rob the souls held within them of the view, not after they had done so much for him already. The core beauty of Allhallow was its forests. Even Gohoriel had felt something swell in his breast as he had flown over the rolling sea of its endless foliage. The trees were dense, coniferous, green-black, and in places cut through with beast trails that led to wide clearings. Gohoriel had taken careful note of the glimmering lights of the planet's civilization centers as he had descended, and avoided their greatest concentrations, instead seeking lesser settlements in the forest's midst. In places, the trees of Allhallow had been cleared away to leave islands of fertile ground, areas claimed long ago by the indigenous people. Those great clearings were host to large keeps, watchtowers, citadels and castles, all linked together by hard-packed roads and trails that wound through the forests. The greatest of the settlements by far was undoubtedly Soul's Well, the fortress monastery of the Angels of Absolution. It was a mountain of concentric curtain walls reaching up to a high-walled fortress of black stone that pierced the lowest clouds. The time to pay that grand edifice a visit was a little way off just yet, but Gohoriel would get there, in time, bearing his own particular kind of gift. There was no doubt this chapter had chosen their homeworld for its resemblance to the long-lost planet of the First Legion. Gohoriel felt gratification mingle with a fierce sense of indignation. The symbolism was half the reason he had made the journey, but the planet's similarity grated nonetheless.
Allhallow was unmistakably an echo of ancient Caliban, though given the width of the beast paths, the monsters that hunted its forests were far less dangerous than those of the First's homeworld. A fitting analogue for its settlers, too. Gahoriel felt his blood curdle the more he thought about it. A successor chapter, their blood even weaker than that of the so-called Dark Angels of the 41st millennium, had the gall to claim an arboreal planet and fashion it in the image of his forefathers. Worse still, and uniquely amongst the Unforgiven, this was a chapter that considered itself literally absolved of the sins of the past through the purging of Caliban. Though they worked alongside their fellow chapters and fought well by all accounts, they saw those ancient events as travesties committed by forefathers so distant they may as well have been another race entirely. Gahoriel snorted in disgust. No act, no matter how apocalyptic, could erase the shame, the terror, the immortal stain of dishonor that was known to the adepts of the Imperium as the Horus Heresy. It was indelible, impossible to remove. Chaos was in everything, in every one of the Adeptus Astartes, and in every man, woman, and child. This, at least, the upper echelons of the Dark Angels were finally coming to acknowledge, and to loathe themselves all the more for it, as was only right. But for a Brotherhood to pretend otherwise, to openly call themselves absolved of sin, this was an insult that could not be borne. Gripping his staff of Calibanite oak, Gahoriel set his jaw and made for the crenellated guard fortress on the horizon.
"Well, well,"
said Landers Harrison, tapping a cracked data slate, fogged with a patina of bad maintenance.
"Come over, young Fenus. Look what the gate skulls picked up on."
Fenus, the lanky youth with whom Harrison had shared garrison duty for the last 6 weeks, came closer, peering over his shoulder pauldron with the expression of a mole that has burrowed up into the sunlight.
"Emperor's grace, it's one of them, isn't it?"
"Yes and no,"
said Harrison, peering closer himself. It was hard to make out the figure in any detail, especially in the evening gloom, but there was something different about it.
"Not more bloody riddles," said Fenus. "Is it one of the absolvers or not?"
"I doubt it," said Harrison. "Wrong heraldry. This one's battle plate is black as midnight."
"The stories say they're white."
"Yes," said Harrison. "I know that, boy. I told you that myself, remember?"
"I can't wait to see the look on the faces of those blackguards at 6 North when we tell them that we got chose over them. That'll pay them back for the last challenge, all right."
"But the absolvers never come this far west. We're not good enough for the likes of them. Even if we won the 5 challenges, they'd still find a reason to ignore us."
"And yet, there he is, right?"
"I told you, this isn't one of them. Emperor's teeth, awaken the other skull, boy. You can work this thing better than me."
Fenus fiddled with the runes on the side of the data slate, humming a tuneless psalm of appeasement to its machine spirit before knocking it with the heel of his hand. The screen glitched, fuzzed, and came into focus a little more.
"Throne above," said Fenus with a shiver. "Big brute, isn't he?"
"What's he wearing there?"
said Harrison, pointing to the wreath around the figure's neck.
"Some kind of necklace," said Fenus.
"Yes, I can see that," said Harrison, levelly. "It does look a lot like, I don't know, trophies of battle, maybe? Look, you can see the eye sockets."
He swallowed hard.
"I'm not sure I want to see them close up. Maybe he'll reconsecrate our gate skulls, then leave."
Without taking his eyes from the data slate, Harrison slapped Fenus on the forehead.
"Look at him, boy. He looked like a tech adept to you. A servitor, perhaps. You think he's on an errand to swap out faulty servo skulls?"
"So what is he here for, then?"
Harrison did not reply for a long moment.
"Nothing good."
Seconds stretched past as the Castellans watched the figure thrash his way through the undergrowth towards the dry moat with long, powerful strides. A lizard mule, startled from its lair, raised its frill in anger, then saw the intruder for what it was and slunk off for easier prey. The stranger had a long staff in one hand, and at his hip was a sidearm so large it would probably have taken all of Harrison's strength to lift it.
"Should we sound the alarm, do you think?"
"No, not officially, anyway. It wouldn't go down well if he was an absolver, if you take my meaning. Bearing news, summoning us to war, or similar, we should just spread the word that we have company."
Right.
The tall youth peered in close, taking in the tusked helm of the figure approaching the gate.
I mean, you should do it, Fenris. Go and tell the others.
Right, right.
The youth scurried off down the corridor towards the command hall, grabbing his halberd on the way past.
Greetings of the day, my lord,
called out Harrison. He stepped forward from the shadow of the lowered drawbridge, thumped his chest twice with a closed fist, then made as deep a bow as his starch-stiff tabard would allow.
I am Landers Harrison, castellan of this meagre fortress. The honour you do us is too much.
The space marine, still some 50 yards away, made his way towards them at an unhurried pace. Harrison cursed himself for a fool. Had the stranger heard him? Or had he simply announced himself too soon? There was a stifled laugh from the battlements behind him. The men up there were enjoying his discomfort, no doubt. The most part of the fortress's guard was up there, gathered to see a space marine in the flesh. They were standing deliberately apart from the Icarus quad guns at the corners, so as not to offend their distinguished visitor. Harrison glanced back for a moment. They were shielding their eyes from the setting sun, peering intently at the figure in black armour striding towards them. There was a part of him that would definitely have preferred them to be manning the guns instead. Oddly, the stranger still didn't seem to have come into focus. The gloom gathered about him like a shroud. There was definitely something unsettling about him. The Absolvers usually came in massive transport vehicles or on rugged war bikes, but this space marine simply walked. Harrison had stationed 3 men hidden in the gatehouse above the murder holes, a regulation measure, of course. Their lasguns would soon be pointing straight down, ready for a shot in the remote chance their visitor proved hostile. The men up there had complained bitterly, for everyone amongst them knew they would likely be the first to die if the space marine attacked and have little to no chance of escape. But they had taken their positions all the same. Directly behind Harrison, Fenris and a dozen of his fellow cadets were in full ceremonial armour, their halberds raised as those of an honour guard. Harrison had asked for them to keep their limber straps good and loose, just in case. And yet, in the face of the towering figure that had clumped across the drawbridge as if he owned the keep himself, the 10-foot polearms seemed little more reassurance than toothpicks. Harrison felt sweat run the length of his spine, a palpable sense of dread overcoming him as the newcomer came within 10 feet and stopped. Now he was in focus. Every detail etched itself into Harrison's mind. To say the newcomer was forbidding was a grotesque understatement. He was almost 8 feet tall, clad in ornate black power armor etched with silvered Gothic script. He held in one hand a twisting staff of polished wood, its knots and stubby protrusions at odds with the Baroque sculptures and smooth finish of his deep black plate. Age-browned skulls were worn in a wreath around his neck, some small, some so large they could not possibly have come from a human. The figure's sheer presence was terrifying, but it was his visage that would haunt Harrison's nightmares.
"Tell me the name of this fortress," intoned the figure.
His voice was deep, cultured, and smooth, emanating from a snout-like grill framed with large jutting tusks like those of a beast. Around his head was a complex apparatus of coils and spark plugs that gripped his temples like a vice.
It is simply called Sixth West, my lord, said Harrison, casting his eyes down at the floor. We're not an old enough fortification to have a herald's name. For such lowly souls, it is a signal honour to even speak with you.
It is serviceable.
Good, said Harrison. Glad tidings.
Are there any other Adeptus Astartes within a day's travel?
That is very unlikely, said Harrison. The vast majority of them are still on campaign. Engaged at the Cadian Gate, no less, added Fenris, proudly, puffing out his chest.
Shut up, Fenris, hissed Harrison over his shoulder.
The Cadian Gate, said the stranger, his voice a low growl. I see. But some have remained here.
Soulswell has a garrison of Adeptus Astartes, I believe, said Harrison, pointing to the sharp triangle of black stone that dominated the northern horizon. In truth, he was glad of the excuse to look away. We see craft coming and going, but we rarely see the Absolvers this far south.
Absolvers, indeed, said the stranger, raising his staff. They cast themselves as if they bring absolution and tell themselves they are already absolved. Fear not.
We will have them here soon enough, and teach them their place.
The vise of pipes and cables around the stranger's head glowed bright for a second. Harrison felt a pressure in his head grow quickly from a pulse to an ache, then to a splitting, agonizing migraine. He fell to his knees, his spine twisting in a senseless attempt to wriggle free of the pain. He ground his fist into one eye as the other bulged. Sights and sounds flashed through his mind like the flickering of a broken zoetrope. The guardsman saw the stranger striding past him, glowing staff sweeping through the air. Tendrils of pink and blue light shot out to connect with Fenris and his fellow wallsmen. Harrison saw human bodies twisting and bulging, craniums distending and eyes bursting from heads in showers of nameless fluids. Screams filled the air as men's heads sank into their chests, arms elongated and grew extra joints. Liquid flame cascaded from the mouths of men who were gibbering and drooling in panic and terror. Fenris suddenly elongated, as if being stretched on the rack, gangling limbs and knobbly neck stretching upwards before filling out with random bulges of muscle and jutting horn. Desperately scrabbling to focus and draw his pistol, Harrison felt a ripping, tearing pain in his armpits. He fell forwards with a scream, not onto two hands, but four. Two strange, glistening limbs shivered and buckled beneath his own, as pink as an infant's skin, but heavy with muscle and cabled sinew. He was about to scream in horror, but it died in his throat. There was a shocking warmth in the lower part of his face. With mounting panic, he felt his jaws distend, his mouth filling with long, needle teeth.
"Emperor, save us!"
said Harrison, his words distorted by his weird, needle-toothed mouth.
"Please, no!"
Hurried footsteps came from above. The guards atop the battlements, no doubt rushing to the Icarus quad guns at the fort's nearest corners. Harrison looked up, eyes misted with tears. The stranger had spotted them running along the ramparts and gave voice to a weird, sibilant phrase as he took something glass-like from his belt. The stranger opened the file and sent out a scattering of something that glinted in the twilight. In seconds, the battlements echoed not to footsteps, but to screams. Harrison saw a chink of black in the keep's wall as the sallyport behind the west tower opened a crack. He shouted out and clawed at the knee pad of the stranger, hoping to distract him, but the space marine just brushed him away. He struggled to get up, but his center of gravity was all wrong, and he stumbled forwards again, scrabbling on six limbs rather than four towards the newcomer. The stranger kicked him as if he were a troublesome dog. The impact so violent, he felt his collarbone break and a couple of ribs along with it. Crying out, Harrison twisted as he rolled, sharp agony jangling in his chest. He buckled over and curled in pain, catching a glimpse of Valak Vanderson, one of the younger wallsmen, sprinting out from the sallyport towards the tree line. For a second, he thought that his distraction had been in vain and that the stranger had seen Vanderson disappear into the trees. But the giant was already striding onwards, the energies flickering from his staff, focusing his strange magic on the garrison troops atop the crenellated battlements once more. Harrison felt the edges of his vision turn black, the confusion and pain of the last few minutes threatening to rise up and take him into oblivion. Within less than a minute, the guards of Sixth West had become awful, horrible mockeries of men, more like a freak show from the most demented of carnivals than a sentry patrol. Through it all strode the newcomer, resplendent in his black plate armor, as he walked through the open drawbridge into the keep he had taken without so much as drawing his gun. The stranger stopped on the threshold, looked up at the empty murder holes in the gatehouse, and turned back to the fleshy nightmares he had left in his wake. He was the last thing Harrison saw with his mortal eyes before they melted from their sockets, turned liquid by the sheer chaotic power rippling in the air.
"Come back inside, then, brave men of Sixth West," said the stranger. "We have much work to do before our audience arrives."
Valak Vanderson ploughed onward at a stumbling run through the bracken of the Longfield Fallow, nettles stinging his shins and sharp rocks cutting into the threadbare soles of his ill-fitting boots. It had been 2 days since the horrendous events at Sixth West. 2 days with no sleep and no food either, other than the pine nuts he had foraged on the way. He was so sick of them now, sick of the smell of sticky amber sap and the sharp edges of the Duskenwald's pine cones. What he wouldn't give for half a roast pig. For the 15th time that day, he daydreamed of the juices of a thick slab of gammon, the mouth-watering smell of it.
Then he thought of the stink of burning human flesh back at the fort, and his appetite left him completely. Not long until he made it into the needle trees again, Vanderson told himself. Not long until he was out of the moonlight and into the relative safety of the forest. If he could find a patrolling servo skull, his chances of survival would increase tenfold. He might even be taken to a keep before nightfall to report on what he had seen. Maybe even Soul's Well itself. And yet the fortress monastery was still a long way off, said a nasty little voice in his head. Dozens of leagues away, days and nights of constant travel, even if he somehow found a lizard mule big enough to ride. And if the thing that followed him didn't run him down in the night.
Shut up, said Vanderson to the voice. Leave me alone. I can make it there. It's not that far.
The thing in his head laughed, mocking and cruel. He turned round, trying to shake the feeling that it wasn't just his imagination, but that he had actually heard it this time. Some nameless instinct flared up, the same hindbrain warning that his forefathers would have felt when witch wolves howled in the distance. The hairs on his neck, his forearms, his shoulders all stood and bristled, his muscles uncomfortably tense. Vanderson could feel something, not so far away, looking at him, looking into him. The young warrior broke into a run, panting, thin trails of tears trickling from the corners of his eyes. He tripped, stumbled, cut his hands, and got upright once more, his awkward stagger turning into a run as he finally found a patch of solid ground. He felt his lungs burn as the eaves of the forest loomed up ahead, then launched into a bed of bracken, scooping out with his arms like a champion swimmer at the Five Challenges as he fought through to the woods behind. Then he was through, bursting out like a startled boar into a slight incline carpeted with tree needles. He looked behind him, but nothing was coming through the bracken. The night air was still. Finally safe, Vanderson told himself. The nasty voice in his head snickered again, no doubt enjoying the sensation of him lying to himself.
Not yet, said a deep voice to his right.
Ah! Shouted the young guard, falling back awkwardly onto one hand so hard his wrist broke with an audible crack. He pushed away, scrabbling in panic through the pine needles as a massive shape loomed out of the shadow of the woods ahead. The stranger from the keep.
Do not run, he said,
his voice strange as he cocked his tusked head to one side.
I bring a gift to help you. Look.
Vanderson felt himself compelled to look up at the monstrous giant, his baleful red eyes glinting in a bulky, broad silhouette. He was holding something out towards Valak, the soft blue of the night sky shining from its rounded edges. A human skull, brown with age and polished to a high sheen.
This is a boon for you, mortal man, said the giant, and it will bring gifts to others in turn.
He took out a wide strip of Hessian and wrapped the skull in it, tying the cloth's ends together and tucking it roughly into Vanderson's belt.
Do not lose it, or you will suffer the same fate as your friends at the keep and be given a new body that you will not find to your liking.
Vanderson looked uncomprehendingly upwards, his mind drowning in a sea of fear.
You will be flesh changed. Do you understand?
Yes, said Vanderson. Just let me live. He briefly recalled seeing Harrison writhing on the floor, fleshy arms sprouting from his armpits as his eyes goggled in panic and pain. The tusked stranger gave a sigh.
Oh, you will live, little man. You have work to do.
The giant reached out two fingers, each the width of a dagger's hilt. Vanderson, out of his mind with fear, froze like a winter corpse rat as the giant pressed the tips of each finger against his temples, holding them there for a second before removing them with a slight shiver.
Now, get to it.
Vanderson nodded vigorously before backing away. The stranger stood, watching him with those glowing red eyes. He seemed to be studying him intently, his manner as if he was a parent watching an infant animal take its first tentative steps. Vanderson put a tree trunk between them, pressing his back against it in the hope that the stranger would leave. Then he heard a faint hum of servo motors as the giant turned and strode off, wood cracking and splintering underfoot as he went. The guardsman ran for his life. Half dead with exhaustion, malnourished and so tired that his eyes kept rolling back in his head, Valak Vanderson stumbled upon the mosaic-paved road to Sol's Well. Not long until he was safe, he told himself, but somewhere in his head he knew that was a lie. Now and again a tattered supplicant who had come to gaze at the fortress's glory would wish him well, hold out a cask of stale water for him to drink from, or sprinkle him with cheap incense droplets as he passed. Even the thrall guards and archer serfs in the towers looked upon his bloody feet and the smears he left behind him with approval. They saw only a pilgrim who had sacrificed much to come before them. Somewhere Vanderson had lost his boots, and he had the weather-beaten, sunburned look of a man who had walked for days without rest. Vanderson ignored them all. After all, he had work to do. The main arterial route of the Fortress Monastery, the Road of Supplications, stretched across the entire continent in one form or another. Here it was a wide mosaic-tiled pathway, clean of all but dust and the gifts of vassal supplicants. It was flanked by long, fluttering banners that displayed the finest victories of 8,000 years of loyal service to the Emperor, each mounted on a tall pine tree, denuded of its branches, to better display its adornment. High above them, crows circled and cawed, kept away from banner and mosaic by burning crown-like braziers. The high torches lit the gloom, casting an orange light down from each stripped bare tree. Every so often, the crackle and pop of boiling sap would send a flurry of embers trailing lazily through the night. The fortress up ahead was built atop a mountain of astonishing grandeur. Sol's Well was rumored to have a deep abyssal pit at its heart that led down to the water table beneath the mountain. Vanderson's grandsires had always said the mountain had been cored by the arboreal god Ferna, its great pit scooped out by his vast gnarled hand so that he might quench his thirst while he sat atop the peak and marvelled at the planet's arboreal vistas. Now only the absolvers drank from that deep artesian well. They had taken Ferna's seat for themselves, as was their right, as the rulers of the planet and defenders of the Imperium. Eyes cast down, Vanderson saw depictions of sacred scenes in the mosaics under his bloodied feet, of Ferna gifting the mountain to the absolvers, of the crushing of the green beast, of the time of upheaval and the smiting of Cardinal Bucaris. Each time he felt his spirits uplifted by the depictions of such glory, the horrible voice in his head would tell him the awful truth, the death toll, the confusion, the starvation and anarchy left in the wake of each conquest. The voice would not let him rest, talking to him every time his mind drifted off, and waking him back up every time he lapsed into a half second of sleep, even as his feet shambled ever onwards. "Nearly there," he told himself. "Nearly dead," replied the voice. Vanderson wandered into the shadow of the portal of Sol's Well, a towering edifice that was as much water clock as it was gateway. Sculptures of saints, dragons, and sacred engines of war ticked and swung and clattered into place, clashing lances against metal scales with faint metallic noises. The portal was one of the wonders of Allhallow, beloved by all who hailed from there. Its main gates only swung open when the Imperial Knights came to pay homage from nearby Henchkeep. Vanderson had always hoped to see them in person one day. The personnel doors at the gate's base seemed tiny by comparison to those of the portal, but they were the only chance Vanderson had of getting inside. As he approached, a heraldic cyber servitor, dwarfish in size but with a child's head upon its thick-set body, descended from its gargoyle's perch. It was hovering upon a repulsor pack fashioned to look like wide silver pinions, and bearing a set of scales in one hand and a short spear in the other.
"Halt you, pilgrim," it said,
its voice tinny and oddly squeaky.
"Pay respect here."
"I have work to do,"
said Vanderson, his voice ragged and wheezy from exhaustion.
"You will halt,"
said the Seraph Servitor, its cybernetic eye whirring. Part of its chest fell away, a nozzle extruding from where its heart should have been, with a tiny pilot light flaring in front of it.
"I bring news to the Masters. News of a visitor. An angel of death, in black rather than white."
"And?"
The Seraph paused.
"Explain."
"This newcomer took 6th West by force. He's one of them, I swear it. A space marine. A black angel."
"Black angel,"
said the Seraph, its bionic eye unfolding like a flower to expose a long lens that sent ruby light panning across Vanderson's face.
"Protocol initiated."
"What is that light? I don't..."
There was a loud clank from the gatehouse ahead.
Three heavily built vassal warriors, their livery in the bone and black of the absolvers, emerged from the shadows of the gate ahead. One stood right in front of him, the other two flanking him so that he had no way out. They lowered their ornate lasspears towards Vanderson's chest.
"What's in the Hessian?"
said the closest guard. Vanderson took it out of his belt and opened it to show the yellow-brown skull inside. He wanted to tell the truth of what had happened to him, let the words spill out in a jumble until the dreadful weight upon him had lifted. But for some reason, he just couldn't get them out. It was as if his mind was stuffed full of fraying thread, confusing his thoughts any time he tried to focus on the recent past.
Relic,
he managed, turning it over in his hands to show it had no augmetics. The guards nodded in assent. It was common enough for pilgrims to carry the bones of the revered dead.
"Congratulations, runt,"
said the eldest of their number, a pox-scarred brute in ornate plate armour with a laurel wreath curling around his helm.
"You have yourself an audience."
Chapter 8. Plague of Change. Soul's Well, Allhallow, Scorpid Cluster. Vanderson limped and staggered through the tall vaulted corridors of Soul's Well, too tired to take in the beautiful tapestries and ornate auto-sconces that lined the walls. He was led through inner gates and along darkened tunnels, his escort the three vassals from the great portal. The fortress monastery was immense. It felt like he'd been walking for the best part of a day since he'd passed through its legendary gateway, and he had long ago stopped staring in awe at the spectacle and grandeur that surrounded him. The older warrior marching in front of him, who Vanderson now thought of as Elder Pox because of his acne-crated visage, was still staring straight ahead as he marched with clockwork precision along the cold stone corridors. By contrast, the two guards behind their sergeant were watching him like hawks. Whenever Vanderson veered close to a wall, hoping to rest his head on a buttress or stone memorial plinth, one of the two vassal warriors behind him would prod him with the butt of a las spear, or simply guide him with a firm hand back on course. After a while, Vanderson came to realise that the one to the left of him was taking any excuse to hit him, whilst the one on the right was stern but not violent.
"They will beat you to death, you know," said the nasty voice in his head, "once you've given your news."
He wristed lance backwards, catching a glimpse of his two guards, one grizzled and bearded with heavy brown curls, one with a clean jaw and a nasty smirk. The smirker saw him looking and brought the end of his polearm up, catching Vanderson under the chin and rattling his brain as his jaws thumped closed. He half fell as he turned, steadying himself with an outstretched hand before staggering onwards, almost falling into Elder Pox before resuming his stumbling walk. The bearded guard gave a tut of disapproval, but he was not sure if it was aimed at him or at Smirker. 3 more minutes and they had reached a massive vaulted hall, long columns reaching up to arc out and become the inner ridges of vast domes. Despite his exhaustion, this time Vanderson could not help but look upward, taking in the elaborate friezes and frescoes that stretched up and around the domes. There was enough gold leaf here to feed a keep for a dozen winters.
"The Grand Atrium," said the guard with the beard. "Count yourself lucky, pilgrim. Few of your number ever get this far."
"It's very amazing," said Vanderson, lamely. "But I have work to do."
The cruel voice in his mind laughed, a high-pitched and mocking sound. He shook his head, trying to clear it out. His brain was hurting now, a thumping headache that got worse every time he looked up at the frescoes of imperial saints and the gargoyle-like creatures they were impaling on their lances. Thump, thump, thump. Vanderson realized the noise was not his headache, but footsteps. Footsteps so heavy they echoed around the dome like the drums of war.
"Is this him, I vassal Firenz?" said a voice from behind and to the right, rich and mellifluous. "It is, my liege."
Elder Pox's voice sounded like a rough croak by comparison. Vanderson looked around and saw a figure from legend. The Lord of Soul's Well was massively built, head and shoulders taller than Elder Pox and near twice as wide. His armour was every bit as ornate and exquisitely fashioned as that of the stranger who had attacked the fortress, but where that one had worn battle plate of black with ornate gold filigree, the Absolver Lord wore fluted and sculpted armour of ivory white. An ermine cloak cascaded down from a gorget framed by two massive pauldrons, and a strange backpack of onyx rose behind his head.
His expression was not that of a king, nor even that of a guard looking down on him. He had an easy smile and a glint in his eye that made Vanderson frown as if he should recognize him.
Long day, my lad.
I have work to do, said Vanderson.
And what work is that? Can you not afford a respite, given the circumstances?
I bring a message for the Castellan of Soul's Well, he replied, doing his best to shake his head clear of the chuckling that echoed through it.
He felt himself shrink inside for a moment, the words bubbling out of him.
There is one here who would make you pay for your
Let's take this somewhere a little quieter, said the armored lord, lightly placing a hand that could have crushed a human head upon Vanderson's shoulder. That will be all, High Vassal. Please wait in the southern vestibule.
Of course, my liege, said Elder Pox. Though your message said we were to escort the...
That will be all.
Of course.
The guard sergeant, his face twisted up into what he probably thought was a smile, backed away, motioning his men to do the same. They bowed as one, turned smartly, and made their way back the way they had come. The absolver, his hand still on Vanderson's shoulder, started slowly towards one of the side chambers that opened out from a wall full of sculptural scenes of battle. Half dazed, Vanderson walked alongside him, shooting occasional glances up at the lord's handsome features as he talked. Vanderson had to keep reminding himself the kingly figure was talking to him, and him alone.
You have important news, I hear. Let's retire to this chamber before we speak of it.
Vanderson nodded. He had a feeling that retiring anywhere would mean he was unlikely to come back out, but was too intimidated to disagree.
I find the Grand Atrium to be excellent for bellicose speeches, my lad, but absolutely awful for personal discourse. I only chose it as a rendezvous to fulfill certain expectations.
Yes, but I have work to do, stammered Vanderson.
So you say,
nodded the king, guiding Vanderson through into the chapel.
And we shall see you to this work as soon as we can.
Hard, confident footsteps filled the hall as another absolver strode quickly up to them. He was clad head to toe in ivory battle plate, wax-sealed ribbons of parchment on each of his great pauldrons.
Master Castellan, said the ivory warrior, it is as you suspected. The recently translated fleet has elements of the first emerging from some manner of broad-spectrum data shroud. Their command echelon has already made planetfall, and only now is approaching us for an audience.
I have business to conclude here first, said the king, for this young man speaks of an angelic figure in black. I am sure they would understand.
The newcomer bowed his head.
Of course. Have Sergeant Nexer ready his hunters for dispatch to their location, and tell him to act as necessary to ensure our shared agendas align. Use those exact words. Tell him to greet our visitors with due honor and let them know I will be with them as soon as I can.
Striking a fist upon his breastplate in salute, the messenger turned on his heel and marched back the way he had come. The king smiled down once more at Vanderson, guiding him towards the room at the edge of the atrium. The chapel was a visual feast, all statue-lined alcoves and elaborate chandeliers, but ultimately it was nothing next to the presence of the Absolver Lord. Vanderson still found it difficult to look away from him. His tanned skin wrinkled around the eyes, reminding Vanderson of his father. His teeth were white, but one was broken behind a swollen and slightly bruised lip. The lack of perfection made the Space Marine seem a little less frightening, more human than the statue-like saints of battle depicted in the keep's mosaics and friezes. The armored giant pressed his palm against a rune slate as they passed inside, and a heavy door slid shut behind them.
My name is Master Castellan Modron of the Angels of Absolution, he said. I have the honor of being the steward of this great fortress, Soul's Well. And you, my young guardian of the forest?
Valak Vanderson, of Sixth West.
I see. Tell me, Valak, this work you speak of, is it to bear me a message?
Yes, said Vanderson, if you are truly the Master Castellan of this fortress.
I do indeed have that honor. Sometimes I even get to defend it.
Then I'm to tell you this.
The words came out in a strange groan, as if it were someone else speaking through Vanderson's mouth.
"You will wear your innate corruption for all to see," he said in a guttural monotone. "You and all those who consider themselves absolved, you will exhibit the sins of the fathers, and we will expose the truth within. There is no escaping it. The work of eons has already begun."
Vanderson suddenly collapsed to the floor, panting with sweat rolling down his temples. His throat felt hot, stinging, as if he were choking back vomit. Modron dropped to his haunches, placing one large hand behind Vanderson's spine and propping him up.
"Where did the Black Angel give you this message, Valak?"
"In the Duskenwald. I escaped through the Sallyport, but he tracked me down." The words came in a rush, as if a dam had broken. "I did not want any of this. I just wanted to escape. I don't belong here."
"Catch your breath, son. No need to proceed until you are ready."
"Aren't there other absolvers coming to meet you?"
"In time," said Modron. "If there is a hostile action leveled against our planet, no matter how small, then it has my full attention. They can wait."
Vanderson gulped down air, sitting upright and nodding. After a minute had passed, he pushed the giant's hand to one side. "I can continue," he said, coughing to clear his throat as he got to his feet. His vision swam, churning like blood in a whirlpool. He staggered, but Modron guided him to sit on one of the chapel's pews.
"You can talk sitting down," said Modron gravely. "Go on. You say you escaped."
"Yes," said Vanderson, nodding again. "He attacked us, but I'm not sure how. Some kind of witch magic, I think. He didn't even fire a shot."
"What did this magic look like, Valak?"
"It changed them," said the young man. "It came out of his stuff and changed them into monsters." He looked up to meet Modron's eyes. The Absolver Lord was gazing down, full of concern, the finger-thin beard around his mouth pulled into a triangle by his downturned lips. Vanderson found himself caught somewhere between awe and dread before pulling his wits back together. "I can continue," he said, hugging himself for a moment before exhaling deeply. "It's fine."
"Good. This space marine, Valak, he looked something like me, did he not?"
"No," said Vanderson. "Not really. He was big, but he had all this gold script on black armour, strange tusks on his helm, and a weird device clamped around his head."
"Did it have coils at the temple and a kind of hood?"
"I think so," said Vanderson, with an involuntary shiver. The hairs on the backs of his forearms were sticking up at the memory. "It's hard to explain. The hood lit up before all the men began to change."
"That makes sense to me. He was using witchery. What else did you see before you ran?"
"Up on the battlements, the men were being attacked by something. I saw glimpses of something weird. Whatever they were, just appeared out of nowhere. I could hear them, but I never saw them. I just ran."
"Understandable," said Modron, nodding. "But you say he came to you in the woods."
"Do it, pawn of lies," said the voice in Vanderson's head. "Do what you came to do."
He felt his headache build to a peak. "Yes," he said, screwing his eyes shut. "He ran me down as I was trying to get away from Sixth West. He came at night and caught me up." His headache was splitting now, robbing the corners of his sight. "He told me to give you this message." Reaching out with his good wrist, Vanderson grabbed a heavy shriving iron from the end of the pew and brought it round hard toward Modron's scalp. Quick as a snake, the Master Castellan caught his arm, squeezing so hard the wrought iron stake fell from his shaking hand. Vanderson could feel his bones grinding. He convulsed, nonsense spewing from his lips.
"Let it flow, foolish cursling!" screamed the voice in Vanderson's head. "Let it out!"
"I think that concludes our conversation, for now," said Modron, hauling Vanderson to his feet and sliding the chapel door open with his other hand. "I have enough information to work with. Hi, vassal!"
Vanderson swam in a hazy fugue, fighting to keep focus. From the other side of the grand atrium, he could see the trio of guards running towards him, their las spears held at the ready.
"Escort this young man to a holding cell. Do so with great care. He is unpredictable and likely mind-snatched by some entity that wishes us harm. He attacked me, or at least tried to. He still has much to offer us."
"Yes, my liege," said Elder Pox. "If this is the best they can do, they have sorely underestimated us."
The smirker moved quickly behind Vanderson and grabbed him by the wrists. He felt them yanked back before the cold metal of a finger-thick chain pressed against his flesh and pulled tight. The Master Castellan pulled his helm from its mag clamp at his waist and placed it over his head, its laurel-crowned faceplate glinting in the gloom.
"Command," he said, the voice unit making his voice strangely mechanical. "Muster an immediate spear-tip strike force for 6th West. Prime clearance."
The bearded guard scowled disapprovingly in front of Vanderson, his las spear's tip hovering close to his throat.
"Move, traitor," he said.
Vanderson was pushed hard, and he staggered away, bullied across the mosaic floor of the grand atrium and into a dark corridor leading away from the light. He caught a glimpse of Master Castellan Modron as he left, staring intently at him, as if he were a bothersome insect. Vanderson was shoved roughly into a cell that was no larger than the inside of a privy. He was forced to stoop and crawl, even to get his legs clear of the rapidly closing door, scrabbling to the back of the tiny room to gather his legs up against his chest. The door slammed shut with a resounding clang that made his brain rattle in his head.
"Make the most of it," said Smirker from outside. "That'll seem like paradise by the time we're finished with you."
The bearded guard laughed, a peculiar cross between a grunt and a sigh.
"They aren't too kind to heretics down here," he rumbled, "and rightly so."
Vanderson shook his head, as if trying to shrug off a bad dream, desperate to think of the words that would persuade the vassals outside to unlock the door. The low throb of pain in his forearm brought his mind back into focus. If he wanted to get out, he had to gather his strength. He stared down at his arm. Thick bruises, purple and yellow, were beginning to blossom where the king's gauntleted fingers had dug into his flesh.
"It's no more than you deserve, basal wretch," said the little voice in his head. "Even this cell is too good for you." "Shut up," said Vanderson,
unconsciously scrabbling at the cloth bundle still tied to his waist. He felt something there.
"Shout and scream all you want," said Smirker. "We're quite used to it."
Vanderson plucked at his waist some more. Something was making it difficult to sit down. His hands found something there, something large and round. He dimly remembered being given something in the forest and felt a rising feeling between relief and mounting terror that the guards had not confiscated it. He took out the Hessian sack at his waist, stared at it as if he had never seen the like, unraveled it, and looked numbly at the contents. A fleshless human skull stared back.
"Do as he says, little piglet," it said. "Scream!"
Vanderson screamed.
In the hearth chamber of 6th West sat Gohoriel of Caliban. The high-backed castellan's seat he had chosen for his throne was positioned at the head of the elder table, and one of the keep's servo-cherub attendants hovered above each shoulder. Before him were the remnants of the keep's defenders, those that had surrendered to him, suffered debilitating wounds, or been so overcome with fear they could do nothing but watch as their new master took his due. Not a single man or woman amongst them had kept their true form, each twisted by eldritch power into something far deadlier and more unsettling than a human being.
"Come forth, the brave," said Gohoriel. "You who would carry my message to the next flock, and the next."
A barrel-chested creature with tiny, handless arms no thicker than sticks stumbled forwards. The distended sack of its cranium flapped like the bulging head of an octopus.
"I shall,"
it slurred, thick strings of drool pouring from its discoloured jaws. It was repulsive, thought Gohoriel, but the killing light of bloodlust was in its eyes. It would serve as a distraction at least, and as a vassal for the infectious changes to come.
"So you do," said the giant. "I name thee Non-Manus. You may spread enlightenment to the non-believers."
At this, Gahoriel took one of the age-brown skulls from around his neck. He untangled the cord wrapped through its eye sockets and placed it around Non-Manus's neck with the ceremony of a king bestowing a mantle of leadership upon his fondest archduke. The mutant clacked its jaws, ropes of spittle flying left and right.
"Now, bear that relic south and make your way into the next keep you find," said Gahoriel. "Use its power to destroy any who would resist the gift of our presence, then return it here."
"Yes,"
said the creature, nodding as if it had only now seen the light.
"And who else amongst you would spread the word of the architect of fate?" said Gahoriel, his arms held wide. "This world is in grave need of his teachings."
"I will,"
said a long-limbed freak of a man, odd bulges of muscle protruding from his elongated neck. He seemed as if he had been crying, but stood proud nonetheless.
"I will bear this new truth for the betterment of all."
"Ah," said Gahoriel, "an eloquent one. How gratifying. Bow that mighty head and inherit your destiny."
The lanky creature knelt down, 11 foot of gangling muscle folding itself into a crouch by Gahoriel's throne. The space marine took another skull from the octocraniad wreath, placing it over the mutant's neck.
"You were once called Fenas, were you not?"
"I was," said the creature, "but I have since seen the light. My mind is aflame, and I have been reborn."
"So you have," said Gahoriel. "You may keep your mortal name. I dub thee Fenas the Brave. You will make a fine spokesman. Go eastward into the night. Carry that treasure with you and spread the word of the primordial truth."
"I shall," said Fenas,
unfolding himself before walking out of the hearthroom as if in a dream.
"May I approach?"
Gahoriel looked askance at the next supplicant. He had the appearance of a normal man, older than the rest and running to fat, but for two things. His eyes were missing from their sockets, and a second pair of arms hung limply from his armpits.
"Ah, my would-be host."
"Yes,"
said the human, scraping a nail gingerly at the edge of the red-black pits that were once his eyes.
"Harrison, I was the one foolish enough to resist you."
"And now?"
"I see things much clearer, my lord. You have my undying allegiance."
"I can believe it. You are fortunate, for I am in a forgiving mood. Come to me, Harrison. I give you a new name this day."
The castellan moved forward, easily avoiding the debris of the broken chairs and shattered candelabras that lay on the floor despite his blindness. He knelt in front of the improvised throne and bowed his head.
"I name thee Truthseer," said Gahoriel,
carefully taking one of the skulls from around his neck and placing the leather loop that bound it over Harrison's eyeless head.
"You above all others have looked upon the glory of change, seeing its light without mortal senses to cloud your perception. Go forth, head east at all times, and share your vision with all you meet, even when the unbeliever and the naive tries to stop you."
"Yes, my lord," said Harrison.
He got to his feet, a little unsteady, and headed for the gate.
"The work of eons is underway once more," said Gahoriel. "Now, who amongst you has the courage to be next?"
In his tiny cell, Vanderson bit his lip, tears appearing at the corners of his eyes. The varnished skull was still staring at him, that maddening grin seeming to mock him.
"Go on, Moonchild," it said. "Scream again. You're going to die here, friendless and alone. You know it to be true."
"No,"
said Vanderson, pushing his fists into his eyes. It was no use. The pain was still there, and the images. Oh, the images he had seen over the last few minutes. Even one of them was enough to scar the mind forever.
"Let it all out, insignificant worm," said the skull. "It's building up in your head. If you don't let it out, it'll burst."
Leave me alone!
Shouted Vanderson, his words reverberating around the cell as if it were the size of an empty cathedral.
But you are not alone, plague-bringer, said the skull. I am in here with you, and I will have my sport.
No!
Said Vanderson, flinging the skull hard against the door. The door flew wide open, and the skull simply stopped in mid-air, turning to face him with a mocking grin. In the corridor beyond was Smirker, scrabbling upright from a half-slump.
What infernus chalice is...
Vanderson found himself shivering, quaking, convulsing as his mind-racking headache spread to encompass his entire body. His stomach convulsed, a wrenching feeling in his core as if an invisible claw clenched at his guts. A stream of glowing white energy suddenly shot from his mouth, past the skull and into Smirker's open jaws, slamming him back against the corridor wall. Smirker spasmed and shook, limbs